Veterans Radio today is dedicated to all who have experienced trauma and war and continue to live with it.
Live from the Veterans Radio studios on the Ave Maria Network in Ann Arbor, Michigan, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host for today's program, former CB, Gary Lilly.
And good morning and welcome to Veterans Radio. It's fine to have you with us this Saturday morning, all across the country, all around the world. And I just want to say to any of our troops that are listening in, you people are superb, and we older vets are proud of you and really impressed by you. Thank you for the service you're giving our country. And someday, when you come back, we all want to meet you. We want to see you in the VFWs and the American Legions and such organizations, because we want to hear about your experiences and we want to talk to you. You are our peers, and we are the ones that want to be your mentors. We want to be your uncles, if you will. So for all of you troops out there, thank you for the superb job that you're doing. Today we're going to have a very interesting but also a very important program. We're going to be talking about PTSD with Dr. Eric Amberg, who's a neuropsychologist in private practice here in Ann Arbor. In my flyer that I sent out, if any of you got it, I said that he was spent 12 years at the VA hospital. Well, that was only part of his experience. We'll let him tell how much experience he has, because he's been in the practice a lot longer than 12 years. So I may have passed out a misconception there. Dr. Amberg has taken a great deal of interest in veterans based on his 12 years of experience, you know, at the VA, probably beforehand, but Doctor, that's probably where you really connected with the veterans. Right now, I just want to comment that the venerable old Walter Reed Hospital is closed down. It's just a bit of Americana there. And the very unfortunate part of Walter Reed was the program, or the whatever was done a couple of years ago, the so-called expose on the bed condition that some of the outside housing was in that was on campus where patients would stay. But Walter Reed was a very caring hospital that did a lot of good for our troops, and it's too bad that the TV decided that or the news decided that they had to rightfully report on it. But it's to anyone who has ever worked at Walter Reed, thank you for all the work that you did for our patients. We've got some really good VA hospitals today, and here in Ann Arbor is one that superb. We're all very, very proud of. And Doctor, you worked at that. You weren't at the Ann Arbor VA. You were at another VA. Okay. And I got an email last night from a Vietnam veteran down in St. Louis, Missouri, and he was talking about how great their VA hospital is. And he has PTSD, didn't know it until 37 years after his experience in the war, and he said they did a lot of good for him. He can sleep through nights right now. So there's a lot of good, dedicated people in the VA healthcare system and in the hospitals that do treat the military. Walter Reed is closed, but the Naval Hospital Bethesda, Maryland, is picking up, and there's an Army one, which I forget now which fort it is at, that's picking up, and I know that Great Lakes Naval Hospital and a number of other ones are just absolutely superb. And there's so much that has come out of our hospitals. The VA healthcare system is the one that developed what we're going to be talking about later on, the MRI. I didn't realize that until I visited their booth at a convention. And there's so many other advances in medicine that comes out of military experience, unfortunately. but it has advanced a lot of our treatment. But speaking of those troops that are overseas right now, we are looking forward to the day that you come back and that we can greet you and say hello to you and kind of take you under our wing into the VFWs, American Legions, and so on. But right now, what we want to say to you is welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on the air, Veterans Radio, with Dr. Eric C. Amberg, a neuropsychologist in private practice. Now, Dr. Amberg, how long have you been in practice?
Well, since 1975.
How many years is that now? 25, 35, 36 years?
That's correct.
Okay. You've seen a lot of people in that period of time.
Yes, I have.
What has caused you to concentrate on PTSD and what are your concerns there?
Well, I started working with PTSD, obviously, at the VA hospital. We didn't call it PTSD in those days. It was war trauma. And there seemed to be a question about...
Closer to the mic.
Okay. There seemed to be a question about their condition and why they weren't recovering. And so looking at the various cases, recognizing that talk therapy by itself was not going to make a difference, I had to do something that would allow veterans or encourage veterans to become empowered so that they could take over their lives and begin to lead normal lives. There are numerous examples where things seem out of sorts, they seem crazy, but there had to be an underlying reason for why their problem existed. It wasn't just symptomatic. I had to find a discover what was it about their condition that was singular. What was it about their trauma that was unique for them? And how could we then bring upon the areas of primary joy that they had before going into the military, connect with that, and bring their life back?
What did you come up with?
Well, I had discovered that there were abnormalities within the brain, certainly, that created these problems. They created symptoms. So rather than talking about the symptoms of PTSD, I need to discover what about their brain, their chemistry, created the trauma? What was derailed? Why did they go awry? So that one thing I could do is I can tell these people they were not crazy. They were not having mental illness. I mean, the symptoms were certainly squirrely, but they needed to know that they weren't crazy, that there was a foundation for their problem. And upon realizing that, the sense of shame and fear began to disappear, and then there was earnest effort to try to make the way back.
From the time, at least in our generation, boys were young, you were taught not to cry, handle it, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was in a gentler way when you were younger, but as you got older, that was basically it, deal with it. And so there came to be a feeling that you were a weak person if you were suffering from PTSD inwardly, that you were weak, you couldn't handle it.
Well, the big question is, what is it? Deal with it, and the it was the part that I had to discover. And if we could work with what the it was, then they could deal with it. But if all we're dealing with symptoms, it's, for example, telling a person who has epilepsy, deal with it, and deal without any medication, without any understanding, what are you going to deal with? And so that's the concept that we need to work with, is what is the it about? What is it? How did the trauma affect your life? And what about your system has created a state where if you have PTSD, you're in it for years. If you understand the it, the PTSD symptoms can clear within 3 to 5 months, not a lifetime.
Very interesting. I'm sitting here thinking about what you just said. And what is it? You're absolutely right. That made a lot of things just clear up in my mind right now. But, you know, I'm going up to the VA hospital for PTSD treatment. I've always told people that are feeling bad about having PTSD is, look, the one thing it proves is that you were normal. If you came back from war the same as when you went in, it meant you had problems to begin with. That may or may not be true, but that's the way that it seems to me. Good people come back very disturbed after war experience, and that would be the normal way to be, in my opinion.
Well, we're not built to take that type of trauma, and when things derail us, we need to understand how we were derailed. War is not something that we're built to do, but we have to deal with the it when things affect our nervous system, affect our chemical system. If a person gets an ulcer, and you say, well, deal with it. If you don't know what you've got, you don't know how to make lifestyle changes, you don't know what kind of medication might be helpful for dealing with this it, you put a name onto it that deals with the underlying problem, you can treat it. If all we're talking about is symptoms, it's very difficult.
Tell me what conclusions you arrived at or what you discovered in your thinking about what is it and, you know, how do we treat PTSD?
Well, the PTSD is a name. It's a name that describes symptoms of an underlying condition. If a person sustained, for example, significant brain trauma, and as a result of that, they develop seizure disorder. Seizure disorder can create flashbacks. So if we have a situation to say, well, he had a flashback without understanding the reason for it, then we have a problem. When I was working at the VA, we had a guy who had come over who had been crawling across the highway on his belly. It seemed pretty crazy. So he came to our unit. I looked at it and said, well, obviously, nobody in their right mind would be going to crawl across the highway. And so we had taken him for the first for a scan of his brain, because I knew there was something in his brain that was causing the problem. And sure enough, when he had been scanned, a great deal of red flags showed up. And I said, you know, this is your problem. It's not that you're crazy. It's that there was something within you. And I was able to explain it anatomically, what happened to cause him to have this kind of experience. Well, it enlightened a couple of people, especially the medical providers, to know that this man was not a crazy man, but a man who was responding to a brain aberration that had caused him to have this experience. We could have called it just PTSD and let it go. But it would not help us to try to treat this.
Tell me what you meant when you said you saw a lot of flags pop up. What type of a scan was it?
It was a PET scan.
PET scan, okay.
It was one of the first that had come out, and so we had to go to Manhattan from New York, Upper State VA Hospital, to Manhattan where they had it.
Okay.
And he was scanned, and the temporal lobe is the area that got ignited, which is responsible when is indicated when we have symptoms of hallucinations, for example, or problems with flashbacks. So I was able to demonstrate that this problem was not crazy, but it was related to a specific area of the brain that became derailed.
So, in other words, it is a physical change in the brain that you can actually spot?
Yes. Yes.
How many people, let's say there were 100 psychologists listening right now, how many of them would understand what you were saying and say, that's right?
Probably not too many.
But, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the program, because I sat in on a meeting that when you were getting organized to the 501c3 that you eventually reached so that you could grant money to start teaching or treating people. But also, what is your ultimate goal in teaching about this PTSD and how it can be treated?
Well, it's empowerment. Right now, people are patients, they're victims, and they remain victims as long as they remain helpless and need to follow orders. But once the veteran recognizes that it is within his power, once he understands the problem, to be able to address it appropriately, then the fear and shame can disappear, and a sense of strength that they had going into the military can be regained.
If it's a physical change, how do you create the physical change that does that? Can you eliminate PTSD?
No, you can't. It's like diabetes. You understand you've got a condition that was brought on by a number of different reasons. You have to do lifestyle changes. You may have to follow diets. You may have to take medication. But these kind of things can help you to deal with a condition that is essentially untreatable without these things. Sitting down and having a conversation or talk therapy to a diabetic without doing anything else may help them, you know, for a few minutes. But it won't help to create an effective way of dealing with the problem. The problem is very real, and it goes beyond the title.
And your belief is that for all these, these many years, the symptoms are being addressed and not the cause itself.
That's correct.
And it is physical.
Correct.
And the physical part can be cured, or can it just be brought under control?
Well, there's no such thing as cure to begin with. I mean, we can change the course of something, but we don't really cure anything. What we try to do is create a mindset, an environment that people can function effectively within. Right now, all we're talking about is symptoms. People have nightmares, so you give them sleeping pills or something of that nature, or maybe a sedative. But you're not dealing with the reason for why the nightmare exists, which could be a sense of imbalance within the chemical system.
And you feel that you can bring things more into balance?
That's the key word. The key word is balance. Can we restore balance to somebody who's been knocked off balance? I think the word balance is a much safer word to use than cure, because that we can talk about. The degree to which you're off balance, what do we do to counter the scales now?
And you can see this physically with you're doing MRIs now, is that?
No, I'm not right now because I don't have that means. That's part of what we're trying to look at in the grant.
We're going to be talking later on about fundraising and grants.
Right.
And so the purpose of it is it research or is it getting the equipment to put into practice what you have discovered?
I think it's both. I think we need to demonstrate that one is that change is not just subjective. If you are working on diabetes, for example, you want to see sugar levels and you want to see them come down so you know that something effective has taken place. Right now, the only way we know if PTSD is working, treatment is working, is by subjective background. I'm feeling better. I can sleep better. But wouldn't it be nice if we could actually measure it and say, not only do you feel better, but the scores are showing you that you are improved.
And that's a physical change that's taking place within the brain.
The brain and body.
The brain and body, both.
Yeah.
Okay. Right now, well, before we get on with Sam Kilberg, who's waiting on the line, who wants to talk about the connection between TBI and PTSD, let me tell you about a fellow that was interviewed by Dale twice now in the last month or so. Met him while we were doing a remote down in Hudson, Ohio. He had taken a bullet that went right through the brain, and he survived, obviously. He had to learn how to do things like walk and talk all over again, and he had gotten his high school equivalency while he was in the military. When he was finally to the point where he could really physically, he had recovered enough he was asked, what do you want to do now? And he said, what are your goals? And he said, I want to go to college. The guy went to college, and he got his teaching degree, and he taught math and one other subject to high school seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part, the dark humor of the military, was when the kids weren't applying himself, he would say, come on, kids, I've got half a brain and I can teach it. You got a full brain, you can sure learn it. What is within somebody? I mean, how can you explain that? I guess is the best way to phrase the question.
Well, one of the things that's important in outcome is, do you have something that you have a passion about? Something that was within you that's stirring that wants to be done. And that's when therapy becomes very personal, where you say, can we bridge from where you were to where you want to be? And the more the person can work from a sense of passion, the greater the outcome. If we're talking, for example, about athletes who have a brain injury, football players, they want to get back on the field again. They don't want to be nursed. They don't want to be talked about. They just want to go back on the field and play. Well, if we can have the same kind of motivation, that drive from individuals who have been derailed and say, don't you want to do this again? And they say, sure I do. Well, let's make it happen. Then therapy moves.
And you start a process that makes physical changes in the brain. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, there will be changes. I've seen that already with other people that I've worked with in the past, where we've seen significant impairment, and then following this individualized approach, there have been very strong changes in the brain that one would never even suspect would happen.
Okay, we're going to get Sam Kilberg on the line with us right now. He wants to talk to you about the TBI, PTSD, and we'll go to a break at the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, I'd like you to explain the mechanics of what you do, if you will.
Sure.
Sam Kilberg, you're with you have a program called Home Runs for Heroes, and
yes.
We want to welcome you to Veterans Radio along with Dr. Eric Gamberg. You want to talk about TBI?
Yeah, right now I'm actually at one of the baseball fields. I run a 3-day charity baseball tournament for veterans with traumatic brain injury and PTSD. I work with the Brain Injury Association of Michigan, with Major Rick Biggs, Parrot Air Force. And right now we have 12 teams out here playing baseball and raising money for veterans coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan with TBIs. And I'll tell you what, it's the second day of play, and we've already raised $6,000.
Terrific. Good for you. And TBI is traumatic brain injury.
Yep.
Okay, what is your program, and are you raising money just to put it into research or treatment of TBI, or are you actually, do you have a program where you're doing it?
Yeah, I work with the BIAMI, the Brain Injury Association of Michigan, the particularly the veterans program in there. And this is the fourth annual year we've run the tournament, and we've raised in the last 3 years almost $20,000. And it goes into the Brain Injury Association of Michigan, the veterans program, and what it does is it either helps, retired veterans who come back. It helps with their treatment if, you know, they can't afford the bills. Or it helps maybe pay for, like, a plane ticket so we can go to Washington and lobby and talk to the Congress moving about trying to help our guys, you know, pass some bills. You know, it goes just in the general fund just to try and move and help our veterans in any way that we can.
Okay, so the purpose of your call is to spread the word about Home Runs for Heroes and the fundraising that you do.
Yeah.
And you're not a psychologist?
Yes.
Okay. You're a dedicated person, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yep, I'm a 19-year-old college student who, when I was 15 years old, I watched a documentary about Bob Woodruff and TBIs, and I was really moved by it. And I wound up doing a little bit more information, and I decided to run a charity event. And it's the fourth year we've run it, raised almost $20,000. I'm just a passionate 19-year-old, I guess.
That's really impressive. I'm sitting here pretty much speechless. Where is this tournament going on, and how do people learn about it?
Yeah, it's in Rochester Hills, Michigan. It's at Rochester High School and Rochester College. And tomorrow it'll be, the championship game will be at Oakland University on the university's baseball diamond. And that'll be at 2 o'clock. And if anybody wants to help out, I can honestly just come to OU tomorrow at 2 and watch a great baseball game. We got a lot of donations coming in right now. We got some banners up at the high school right now. And we're just looking for people to come out, you know, say thanks to our veterans. We have some the American Legion from one of the baseball teams nearby. The American Legion came out, and they're having a barbecue here today at Rochester College. And we're just, you know, spreading the word, getting the word out about traumatic brain injury because not many people know about it, and just raising money to support the troops.
Sam Kilbert, hang on the line, and I'm going to ask Dr. Amberg to comment on what you're doing, if you will.
Well, I think, you know, bringing knowledge about TBI is extremely important because people who have TBI may not know they have TBI. People may just think that they're just acting, they're not lazy, they're not putting a lot of effort in. And I think the awareness that TBI exists, and that especially exists upon people returning from combat, is very important because knowledge is a very important piece of enlightenment. We have to treat, in order to treat, we have to know first what's going on. And if you understand that you may have sustained a TBI, then at least there are things we can do to help you out.
What, Doctor, what is the importance to the troops that aren't participating, that may not be affected, benefit from the money that's being raised, but just to learn that a 19-year-old is doing such things to recognize them and want to help them. How important is that to a troop coming back from war to be recognized and thanked?
I think it's extremely important. People have put in a great deal of effort. They've given of themselves. They've made a great deal of sacrifice. And to know that there are people out here who want to extend the not only the thanks, but also the assistance in trying to help people to get realigned is extremely important and extremely gratifying.
From a healing standpoint, World War II guys came back and they were praised constantly, whether it was individually or in movies or TV later on, when it radio, magazines, newspapers. And when the Korean guys came back, they were pretty much ignored. And then when we Vietnam guys came back, I guess we'd have preferred to have been ignored as to what we got. So there's three different levels right there. And how does that affect somebody coming back for more? The difference from being treated as heroes, being ignored, and being vilified. How does that affect the reaction or the readjustment for the warrior? And then we're going to talk about what Sam Kilbert is doing.
Well, it's essentially the burden that one takes that keeps them out of balance. If someone is feeling welcome when they come back, they're out of balance, but they feel there's enough on the opposite scale to help with the recovery process. If someone has to carry the burden of shame and anger and guilt, along with the chemistry of impairment, that's a humongous type of imbalance to have to experience. There is already abnormal chemistry when someone has injury. It creates a lot of adrenaline, which is what you can say anxiety, it depletes, which we may say is depressive. But then what if you put onto that scale, that side of the scale, self-blame, guilt, hate, a feeling of shame? The ability to restore balance is almost impossible at that point.
So what Sam Kilbert is doing on right now, the money that he's raising is important, but on a ratio, if you will, how much more important is it to the troop coming back that knows that there are people that care about them?
It's extremely important because, again, if you think about the scale, one side has injury and impairment on it, and the other one says, we care about you, we love you. Now that can help to balance the scales. Now a person with that condition says, I need the help, I'm being welcomed back, I want to take advantage of the help. At least there's something on the other side of the scale that says, we can reach out for you.
Yeah, it was all good.
Sam?
Thank you, sir.
I know you've got to get back to your tournament. You got 20 seconds to tell us any last thing that you'd like to say. There was five of them. Sam?
Yeah.
Okay, we're coming up to a break right now, Sam, and I just want to thank you for calling in. Congratulations and compliments to you for what you're doing over there with Home Runs for Heroes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, we have a... If anybody listening, we're on Facebook. You can Google us.
Okay, and
it's an annual tournament that we run every year.
We're at the break. Okay, thanks.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Sergeant First Class Nelson Britton killed 20 enemy soldiers and destroyed 4 automatic weapons. Details after this.
If you're a recent Air Force veteran, you probably spend some time comparing your new civilian life with what you had in the Air Force. Maybe the grass isn't as green as you thought it would be. Well, you might have a chance to come back. We're looking for people in certain career fields to return to active duty. Maybe your job's on the list. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
Britton, a member of Company I, volunteered to lead his squad up a hill with meager cover against murderous fire. He ordered his squad to give him support, and in the face of withering fire and bursting shells, tossed a grenade at the nearest enemy position. On returning to his squad, he was knocked down and wounded by an enemy grenade. Refusing medical attention, he replenished his supply of grenades and returned, hurling grenades into hostile positions and shooting the enemy as they fled. When his weapon jammed, he leaped without hesitation into a foxhole and killed the occupants with his bayonet and the butt of his rifle. He continued to wipe out foxholes and, noting that his squad had been pinned down, rushed to the rear of a machine gun position, threw a grenade into the nest, and ran around to its front where he killed all 3 occupants with his rifle. Less than 100 yards up the hill, his squad again came under vicious fire from another camouflaged, sandbagged machine gun nest well flanked by supporting riflemen. Britton again charged this new position in an aggressive endeavor to silence this remaining obstacle and ran direct into a burst of automatic fire that killed him instantly. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I sure sorry to have had to cut off Sam Kilberg at his home runs for heroes, but as you heard him say, they're on Facebook, and if you would want to look it up, do a search on them, Home Runs for Heroes, it's the numeral 4, not the spelled out word, 4, so Home Runs for Heroes. Look them up and see if you can help the guy in any way. Like an email thanking him for what he's doing. That means so much. Veterans Radio is brought to you in part by U.S. Wings. U.S. Wings is the largest supplier of flight jackets and other military memorabilia and clothing. If you've ever seen, John Travolta standing in front of his airplane with his leather jacket on? That's a U.S. Wings leather jacket. And if you've got 400 friends like Eric Clapton has, you can buy 400 of the U.S. Wings leather jackets to give out to your friends. And if you've got 500 friends like Jim Belushi has, you can buy 500 of the jackets to give out to your friends. U.S. Wings is the supplier of all of the flight gear for the United States military, all branches of the service, plus the New Zealand and Australian Air Forces. And not only do they have the modern-day types of leather jackets and so on, but they also have those old World War II fleece jackets like the B-17 bomber crews wore, absolute reproductions of, and many other things. They have sweaters, varsity jackets. They've got a Hawaiian collection of clothing. Go to their website. It's uswings.com, uswings.com, and they have it. Sale of the day. Every day is a different sale. Right now, it's a leather baseball cap is the sale of the day, and that is for $20.95 instead of $29.95. I got really lucky on a leather jacket. When we were down doing our remote at U.S. Wings, their sale of the day was $100 for a leather coat, and it is beautiful, and I own it. So, thank you, U.S. Wings. Down in Hudson, Ohio, for being a sponsor of Veterans Radio. We're back with Dr. Eric Amberg, neuropsychologist. We're talking about his the treatment that he has devised for PTSD. Tell us about the patent that you applied for.
Well, we applied for a patent that involves an assessment piece. How do you evaluate people with PTSD and TBI? It's a very detailed kind of analysis. And then what kind of a program we put in place that also has measurable outcomes. So it's not just hearsay. We have procedures for evaluating the nature of the impairment, and that's very difficult. And then we have to have measurable outcomes, not only for research purposes, but also for people going through the program. They need to see that what they're doing is having an effect. And with this type of patented program, they can see the benefits of their efforts and also, of course, the consequences of not putting in appropriate effort.
What, and the goal of it seems like a dichotomy that at the one time you want, your goal, as I understand it, is to be able to spread this treatment, but a patent is to protect the rights to a treatment.
That's correct.
And I understand you're a 501c3 and you're looking for grant money and you're looking for any money of support.
That's right. The sooner we get this program started, the sooner we can have an impact upon large numbers of veterans and active military people.
And so the patent gives you credibility, is that it?
Yes.
All right. I know you did not live a lavish lifestyle, so I know it doesn't seem to me that it never occurred to me that you were trying to get rich off of this.
Not at all.
And so I wondered about the patent I concept. Strictly credibility.
That's all it is.
Okay, good. Because your goal is to teach others the same type of treatment?
Yeah, we want to provide education, again, to how to look at what it might be contributing to the condition, what kind of changes can people make, how they can measure these changes, the same way, say, a diabetic. A diabetic would know that the underlying problem is one with the pancreas, and that to deal with it by changing your diet, by changing your lifestyle, by reducing things related to stress, looking at the things that might trigger a type of reaction within the pancreas. Same thing we're doing here. What are the triggers? If we don't understand the causes, we don't understand the triggers either. Some people with PTSD may also have a great deal of pain that's not being reported because it's not, quote, psychiatric. They may have, quote, problems with lack of orientation, which may not be discovered because it's not part of the psychiatric nomenclature. And yet, what we are looking at are the different things that can contribute to this condition, the things that can trigger this condition, the things that we need to alert the veteran about so that he does not fall into this trap of continuing to re-trigger his situation, and so that he can feel more normal and move on rather than being stuck wherever the PTSD is keeping him. It's like an arrested condition where people just relive instead of moving on. And there are mechanisms for helping people to move on.
I want to ask you about the use of MRI, which is, I understand, quite unusual in treating PTSD. How do you use MRI?
Well, the MRI is going to report areas of the brain specifically related to things that have been researched regarding PTSD, areas of the brain that are not functioning properly. For example, the memory system functions as if it's like a broken record. It just goes round and round, and the MRI can pick that up. There's also other areas of the brain that normally deal with survival that are highly active and are related to the stress condition that are looping into this memory system, causing the person to stay fixed in time so that they can have a job, they can be doing different things, but their memory is still held captive to that area. And unless that's released, there is no freedom from PTSD.
I personally, in the mid-80s, when I was at my worst, I'm in the real estate business, and that's how I earn a living. I'm self-employed. But I would see my hand on a telephone, and I literally, and I mean literally, didn't know if I had just hung up from talking to somebody or if I was picking it up to call somebody. And it's pretty frightening, for one thing.
It is.
And there are other times when it was like you wake up in the morning and you don't know where you are. I would do that, but I'd be driving a car on the expressway. And I learned after a while to instantly look at the gas gauge to see how I was doing on gas. And if I was down on fumes, hold my breath till I came to an exit with gas. And if I was okay, I would start trying to figure out where I was, keep on driving till I saw some landmark that told me where I was, and I'd turn around and go home. That I say that very openly because this is the kind of... I had it mild, I'm quite sure, compared to some of the cases that I've heard.
That's correct. One of the things where the diagnostics does not only involve MRI, it also involves looking at brain waves, EEG. And what we find when people experience a condition that you've described called absence, where a person may have a period of time that they can't account for, which produces confusion and disorientation, can be related to a very subtle type of seizure disorder where people for periods of time won't have awareness of what's going on. And again, these are not the kind of things that people look at when you think about PTSD, and yet it's essential that when one does an evaluation, you create a type of differential diagnosis that says this is what it is. Forget the name. Let's forget about the name PTSD for a while and just look at what's going on.
I told that story on myself because I want others to know that it's okay to talk about it and it's okay to bring it up because, as I said earlier, and I've said many times, is if you come back for more of the same, you have problems going into it. We've got a minute and a half, and I'd love you to tell the rat-a-tat-tat story.
Okay. I had a gentleman who I'd seen at the VA who no one could reach. He was always wearing black since 1944. And when I spoke to him, all he said is rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. And eventually he opened up to me, and he said, I was at Normandy, and all I could hear was rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, and people being disintegrated around me. When he came back, he felt fear, guilt, shame, and he couldn't function. What I did with him, I said, what was life like for you before you went into the military? And he said, I was a carpenter. I enjoyed doing things with wood, restoring furniture. And I went to different areas of the VA. We got an old rocking chair. And he started restoring it. And you can see joy returning to his life. His wife came to me maybe about a month or two later after he started doing carpentry, and she was in tears, saying, I got my husband back. He's coming back to me. And then within 5 months, the rocking chair was completed, and with tears in his eyes, he said, I'm giving this to my wife. He was no longer wearing black, and within 5 months of starting treatment, he had left the VA a much, much better shape than he was when he first started working. And that was after 30 years of being captive by PTSD.
It's a remarkable story. It's a touching story, and it gets down to really demonstrating what you're talking about in the way of treatment. When we come back, I want to learn what neurogenesis is. We'll be right back.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
We're back on Veterans Radio. We're talking to Dr. Eric Amberg, a neuropsychologist who is doing some remarkable work on the treatment of PTSD. It's totally different than what others have done in the past. And it's incredibly important. I know that from other conversations and meetings that I've been in with, and a couple of very, very cynical Vietnam veterans who have become well-versed on PTSD themselves. And when I first told one that I wanted to introduce him to you, he said, "Fine, I like shooting down these guys with the idea that they think that they can cure PTSD." And I said, "But you are going to be open-minded and polite, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes, he's quite the gentleman." Afterwards, he said, "By gosh, this guy is onto something." And I watched his body language in that first meeting, and he went from leaning back with his arms crossed, leaning back in his chair at the far end of the conference table, to by the 20 minutes into the meeting, he had slid up towards you on the conference table, was leaning forward as far as he could on both elbows, and you guys carried on a conversation that was so far over the head of the rest of us that we just sat back and listened. It was pretty remarkable to watch him when you two started talking, and he heard what you had to say. It was so different, and I felt the same thing. I don't know the technical aspects of it, but boy, this sounds like something that's special to me. And neurogenesis is one of the important parts of it, is it?
Yes, it is.
Tell us what it is.
Well, it's the ability of the brain's nervous system to grow, to reconnect. Years back, we used to think that if the nervous system was damaged, that was the end of it. And we found differently that people can grow, but that has to be properly treated and nurtured to grow. We have to work from areas of personal passion and interest. A person has to feel interested in what they're doing for the nerves to start growing properly. It can't be done as passive. It has to be very active. And using the concept of neurogenesis and connecting people with their areas of passion, giftedness, and interest, along with specific therapy tools, they can move forward. And as I said before, PTSD can be treated effectively within 3 to 5 months, not years and years and years. But the person has to be actively involved in order for this to happen. I have to know what the tools are.
So for anybody listening out there, and I'm speaking to the veterans mainly, but there are other ways of getting PTSD, a woman being raped and such like that. What we're talking about right here is revolutionary.
Yes.
And it's something that, you know, I've always said, you know, about PTSD, wear it proudly, you came by it honestly. And the message there is, you know, it's going to be with you all your life. But you're telling me it doesn't have to be.
That's correct. It doesn't have to be.
And the rat-a-tat-tat story is one example of how your treatment works, is it?
That's correct.
Okay. It's to get your brain occupied on the good things instead of dwelling on the bad things?
Well, you have to know how to do bridging. Neurogenesis involves bridging. It involves taking you where you are now, bridging over the trauma to where, from where you were before, and assuming that you did have areas of interest that were active and made you feel a passion for life, we then connected that using effective tools that are very personal. If a person doesn't know what their gift is or what their interests are, then we have to help them to uncover it. So that they know what the meaning of the life is about and how do we make it happen.
And you mentioned spirituality earlier when we're at breakfast today.
Right.
And the irony or the good that's coming up that we're broadcasting from WDEO Catholic Radio, the Ave Maria Radio Network, that has an implication on PTSD. Tell us what spirituality does.
Well, we think about life or health, and we can't define those two things. If you look at medical schools, we don't teach about health, they talk about disease. Health comes from within. It's a very spiritual part of us that was given to us. If we connect with our health, our spirit, our soul, then we have that much more incentive to move forward. But if all we're looking about is mechanical things and therapies, we're doing it in a void. We're leaving out the most important component of health, And that has to be contact. It has to be realized that we have it from within ourselves to move forward. But that's a spiritual component of us. Otherwise, we're just working with machines.
In that first meeting that I sat in, and I haven't been in only a few since then, you said two things that really stuck with me. And one of them was, in explaining your the way you treat, you asked the question, if you were a guitar player, you ever notice when you pick up the guitar and you start playing, all of a sudden you're at peace and the stress is gone because you're thinking about the good part, the good stuff. Fill us in a little better on that concept and how it fits in with the treatment.
Well, it's an important part of treatment. There are other areas of the brain that are involved in helping us to feel our power. And when we're playing on a guitar or we're doing something like the carpentry, there's a chemistry of health that comes about. And it comes about because we have a single focus at that point. If the eye be single, the body shall be full of light. So we're actually contacting that inner spirit by focusing on the gift that was given to us. And at that time, a different kind of chemistry emerges. And if we start working from that chemistry, there is nothing more powerful than in a medicine cabinet that can replace that.
And that's, in a way, what neurogenesis is. It's cause, and it's stuff that something you can actually see in an MRI. You want to treat one part of the brain to become the dominant part again?
That's correct.
And so the dominant part before the trauma might have been the pleasure that you got out of life. And after war or the trauma, the dominant part side of the brain is the one that relives the trauma over and over again.
Well, you get derailed. And it's like being on a broken record, like the old 33 records. It just goes round and round and round the old groove. You have to move the needle to the next groove. And you have to move it into a groove that's pleasurable and it gives joy. And if you can work with that concept along with the tools, then PTSD is just a groove on the record of life. It doesn't have to be the dominant groove in life.
And your goal is to be able to teach even veterans how to work with other veterans, say the older veterans working with the younger veterans, and by utilizing the practices that you've developed.
Ultimately, the goal is for veterans to help veterans and to teach them how to do that. As you said, it's not something that I wish to make any money on. The whole goal is to try to get veterans to recognize that they are the ones who know about trauma firsthand. Knowing about trauma, they also know about life. And having gone through the program, they can also then reach out to other veterans saying, I've been there before, I know how it feels. Don't feel shame, you're not crazy, you've just been derailed. Let us get you back on track again.
And the method would be to start doing the things that are pleasurable again.
Well, we need to know what the underlying problem is so that a person doesn't be afraid of their symptoms. If they can say, this is the nature of my problems, I've had a seizure disorder, I have pain, I have problems with sleep, my anxiety levels are off the roof, but I can work with that by doing the proper steps, I can move on track again.
So if Bill Gates or Tom Monahan is somebody with all the names are escaping me, somebody that has some pretty good net worth, we're listening right now. What you are looking for is to get some money into your 501c3. How would they go about doing it? And I'm sure the little person could do it too, anybody
sure.
That has a concern. Tell us about where it can go, how to contact you.
Well, it can go to the Amberg Institute. The address is 2035 Hogback, Hogback Road, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48105. You can email me at ecga4@yahoo.com.
Give that email address again.
ecga4@yahoo.com.
EC being your first initials?
Yes.
And GA?
G is my father's first initial, George, and Amberg, ECGA.
Oh, all right. And the number 4?
Right.
At?
Yahoo.com.
Yahoo.com. All right. I hope that some people will contact you and want to learn more about it and how they can help. We've got 40 seconds left. In 20 seconds, what would you like to say?
I would like to encourage people who have questions. to contact me, because part of what I enjoy doing is education. And if we can help one person to not take their own life or to take or take the life of others, I think that would be very successful.
And I'm sorry that I didn't bring up suicides earlier, but that's the thing that caused you to be alarmed and why you're doing what you're doing. And thank you for listening to Veterans Radio today. Next week, we're going to have another very interesting program. And until then, you are dismissed.
Not all views and opinions expressed on this program reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.